Welcome, everybody. It's time for the newly rechristened City Square, the only place where people can gather to share ideas, learn from each other, and talk about the issues of the day with the politicians, policymakers, and others involved in those decisions. It's the City Square, brought to you by the Association California Cities, OC, where good policy begins. Waste Management, West Coast Arborist, and others, hosted by the inevitable, the indubitable, the undoubtable, Jerry Monty. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, Paul. Well, so here we are. Paul, is this our 100th show now?
Oh, at least.
Yeah, it feels that way. It does feel like we've been doing it for a while, but we're having a great time. Time is flying. We're having a blast. And we are here, you heard it right, in the City Square.
We rechristened the show already after two episodes.
We changed the name to sort of better represent what we're really doing and what we're about. It's about city governance and policy, obviously. It's the government closest to the people down here at the city where good public policy happens, as we say, the hub of public policy for the Association of California Cities. But this isn't just about the city form of government, right? I mean, the City Square is a place. It's a place where we go to share ideas, to socialize, to break bread. It's the Boston Commons. It's Trafalgar Square in London. It's Old Town in Orange or San Juan.
And it's what's been missing in Orange County, I think, for a long time. Because we are spread out, we're a collection of diverse cities, and there isn't sort of, I know they've tried and make Anaheim and other places, or even here where we are across from South Coast Plaza, the public square, the city square. But we're really sort of missing that central unifying place, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, we're a very dense, very populous county, but we don't have a historic downtown. But this is our airwaves version of the city square,
right?
Places where ideas are born and people can still gather and reach their government leaders and those who are in academia and business that relate to them and talk about what's going on, talk about what's important in our lives, what's making a difference in people's quality of life. And, of course, the City Square, although now renamed, is still the square where we all gather, and it still has Cal. Cal's still at the edge of the square. He has a den where he resides. He's our mascot. There he is, coming alive out of the den. Hello, Cal.
He wakes up once in a while.
He wakes up once in a while. And of course,
kind of like the citizens do. They wake up once in a while.
Yeah, and then he roams among them, right?
Yes,
so,
sir.
So the first couple of episodes, we focused on politics and perspectives from the electeds, and we had a pollster, and we had a very successful mayor, and of course, our own CEO of the Association of California Cities here to talk about it, because we're in that season, right? It's November in an even-numbered year. But we're going to take a little different direction today. We have West Coast Arborists, Master Urban Forest Managers with us.
I can't wait to find out about the urban forest. You keep
Paul,
saying that, and I don't... Is there a forest here?
Paul, I promised you, you are just intrigued with the urban forest.
I am.
And I told you
this
Sunday...
We're in a desert. There's no forest.
I got foresters in the studio today, so
okay.
you'll love that segment.
So in addition to Cal the Bear, we have Smokey the Bear.
Right, well, and other cousins, as you'll hear in a moment. But we're going to spend a little bit of time in the first segment before we get to our foresters talking about this new wave of policymakers in Orange County. 49 new elected officials
Wow.
in Orange County. That's 30% of the entire government universe of local government.
Is that typical or is that a record?
No, it's unprecedented. I think we're going to talk about what it means and what these new leaders need to know and the like, and that'll be in our first segment. But first, before we go anywhere, I have to take a point of personal privilege here. This is in California, Southern California, to be sure, Rivalry Week, right? I mean, this is a very important week. And Cal the Bear has his cousin down, and we're going to talk about him in here in a second. This is USC-UCLA week all over Southern California. So those of you who aren't in California and are listening, bear with us. But
bear with us. Yes.
To all my USC friends, Mayor Al Murray in my city of trees, and a number of others, our supervisor, Sean Nelson, who's a Trojan. Let me just remind you that while you constantly remind me that SC has the edge at 44 wins, 30 losses, and 7 ties, we're in the square today.
That's
and
right.
The bear is in the square. And we have Cal's cousin, Joe Bruin, here. And we're excited about that. He came.
Oh, is that him?
There's Joe. Joe, say hi to everyone. A little fiercer than Cal because he's hyped about the game, right?
He's
fired
up.
He's saying hi to our Trojan friends. So all I can say to all of you who are listening who are from Troy, I'm sorry about the tragedy of Troy, but the brilliance of the Bruins will prevail in the Rose Bowl in our house this Saturday. And so,
can I say what I said offline,
about
though?
That. You can say that if you want to, you Midwesterner.
I grew up in Michigan. Ohio State, Michigan. They riots happen. People are killed. I mean, human sacrifices. The entire state paints themselves either red or blue. And I come to California and they say, ooh, this is the rivalry. This is no rivalry. Nobody dies.
Yeah. No, we don't riot. I mean, we don't do anything that crazy. But it will be rocking at the Rose Bowl Saturday. Okay. And you pay attention. You watch on ABC. All right. So that's going to be our show. We're excited that it's show number 3. We got a lot to talk about. We have our friends from West Coast Arbor is here to teach Paul about the forest. We got Cal in the square.
Yep.
His cousin Joe Bruin's here. And we've got all of you here in the city square. And so we're going to get right back to it right after this word from our sponsor.
I'm on the observation deck of the Empire State Building to demonstrate how much material Waste Management recycles. As North America's largest residential recycler, last year alone, Waste Management recycled 12.9 million tons. How much is that? Let's do the math. Carry the 6. It's enough to fill this building more than 27 times. With experience like that, we're bound to have a program that can help your business recycle. Talk to Waste Management or visit thinkgreen.com.
I was waiting for Cal to come and do that, but I guess I had to hit the
cue button. You know what? We talk all the time about gaps and gadflies and about mistakes and about this show being organic.
There's one.
So in the first show, Paul is waiting to cue music to cue me, and I just start babbling, and he's going, "You got to wait for the engineer."
So now I gotta cue you.
Here we are. We're having fun off air with our arborists, and we're not paying attention. So okay. Here we are, back to the show. Listen, we are now 2 weeks removed from election night, and so in this first segment, we want to talk a little bit about those results.
And how many weeks away are we from the next election? Well, already counting that.
Not many. They're already talking about 2016 for crying.
Yeah.
So the results were certified yesterday by Neil Kelly, our registrar of voters, and many.
Who's a great guy. We've had him on the show several times. Not this show, but some of our other shows here at OC Talk Radio. And I thought, what a cool guy. I wouldn't think the registrar? Yeah.
The registrar of voters, yeah. And has a very important job and has done a magnificent job. But he yesterday certified our election, right? Results are in, tallies are done. And many city councils are swearing in their new leaders next week. So it was an election, I think, with significance for Orange County cities. And since we're about cities, we wanted to start talking there. One of the most fascinating stats to me is in that election, we had 49 new elected leaders. Now think about this. At the city level, if you count all city councils, some have 5 members, a few have 7. We have 176 elected officials at the city level. And we have 49 new ones. That's 30% of all the city electeds are coming in to replace someone else. That's astonishing. I mean, I think it may be a record. I'm not sure.
And we talked about this before. You know, I know everybody wants term limits, and we put that in place. But now you got a bunch of people who don't even know where the bathroom is.
Well, and that's part of what I want to address today. I mean, look, you got all these new leaders, some created new majorities on existing city councils, others added to the then current majorities. In some cases, we have split councils, right? 3-2s and 4-1s. But one thing is certain, no matter what council they sit on, Paul, no matter what city you're in and how your council is made up wherever you live, listeners, those people that you have elected are now charged with the most important responsibility that they could be given as a public servant, and that's to govern, right? They have to make decisions that make sense. So how best to do that? You've been in this pitched fight. We talked about that over the last couple of shows. And we're using this show to sort of pivot now from this pitched fight of elections to governance. And I wanted to take this segment to talk to you about that because I think it's an important aspect that the Association of California Cities is intimately involved with, and I want the listeners to be involved with it as well. So what advice do you give a newcomer about how to govern best? First, the first thing is that you should become an expert in a few things rather than trying to be an expert in all things. Very complex in its operations and its leading edge of innovation, whether you're talking about rules and regulations and how it interfaces with other levels of government. It's new stuff, and most of these people have not done it before. So you want to become an expert in a few things and gain trust with your colleagues by helping them understand an issue you become expert in, and rely on them in the issues they've become experts in. And while you may not always agree, the point is to build that trust and to have a working relationship with these people, because ultimately you have to govern with them, and you can't know it all. I mean, you could try to be an expert in everything, in which case you become what I call the linoleum politician. Think of linoleum or masonite, right?
The linoleum politician. I'm trying to ponder that metaphor here.
They're an eighth of an inch deep, and they cover vast areas,
oh,
right?
I see.
What you want to do instead is you want to be the anchor to a building. You want to be the cornerstone. You want to be very deep in particular subjects where you have expertise and interest, and you want to rely on your colleagues to teach you the others. Let me share just a couple of stories. One from a perspective.
We love stories. Give us a story.
One from a perspective of somebody who was new to government many years ago when I was newly elected, and then one when I became more seasoned and long in the tooth and was a mentor. When I was new, I knew there were a lot of things I didn't know, and I became elected in the city of Tustin. I thought I was running for city council to be a governor of public policy in my own hometown, only to find out, I had an urban forest, which we're going to talk about in a little bit.
City of trees.
We were the city of trees. And I also found out we had a water system. I don't know anything about water systems. And all of a sudden, I'm responsible for reservoirs and wells and treatment facilities. And it's like, what? Oh, I don't know anything about this. So what do you do? My advice to all newbies when you come into a situation and you're all of a sudden now faced with governance, and there are, systems, municipal systems, there are assets of the city that you're responsible and charged for as a steward of them, go take out the staff member that's in charge of that department and make them take you on a tour. My public works director got in the car with me, took me and showed me all the reservoirs, the wells, the treatment facilities. I learned more about water in one day than I thought I would, and he taught me the things to read and how to read the budget and the like. So that's my newbie suggestion to you. If there's an area in which you want to get interested and that you want to do good work, and for me it was infrastructure, and so water was a natural because all of a sudden I found myself on a water board as well as a city council, then go out and learn that craft by asking the people the right question. Here's the mentor story for you.
Okay.
As a mentor, I find that the important thing for me to do is find vehicles through which I can begin to share what you've learned over the years with people who are coming in so they get up to speed quickly. And one of the first things I tell them, I had this conversation with a newly elected councilwoman not too many years ago when she sat down with me over coffee. First day after she'd been elected, I took her out for a cup of coffee. Congratulations. Welcome aboard. You're going to get sworn in a week. What do you want to do? And she whipped out a yellow pad, and she had 38 things listed that she wanted to get done her first year. She goes, these are the 38 things I want to do my first year.
Yeah.
And I laughed like you did, Paul. And she said, well, you're laughing at me. I said, no, I'm not. But let me tell you, give you a little perspective on government, how quickly it moves, and what you ought to think about in terms of working with your colleagues. Pick three of those things that you are deeply passionate about. Work on getting those done in your first 4 years. And she gave me like little orphan Annie eyes. She's got gigantic. She went, what? I've got 38 things here I need to do. And the truth is, newly elected officials, you aren't going to do 38 things in your first year. It's going to take you your first year to learn how to do a thing.
Yeah.
How to work collaboratively with your staff, how to ask the right questions so that you know what decisions you need to make when you're facing a budget. All of those things are new to you. So,
you know what's new to me, though, and you brought this up at one of the last ones, and I never really thought about this. How do you switch from campaign mode to governance mode? You've been attacking each other now here, and maybe it got ugly, and you're slinging some mud. Now you sit down, whether or not you liked it, that guy got elected, that person, that woman got elected, that person is now your compatriot, as we're looking at on a national level here. How do you then make that transition to governance?
Excellent question, and really an important segue into what I really want to talk about in this segment, and that is you need to go and reach out and get the resources available to you to train yourself to govern. Now, you're right, Paul. You've been in a pitch fight. There was a winner, there was a loser. But if you find yourself on that council, whether you supported that candidate or not, they're now your colleague, and they're one-fifth in most cases, sometimes one-seventh, of the city governance. And you need to have a relationship with them if you want to get your things accomplished. On your list of 38, if you want to get one of the three done that first year, you're going to need votes.
Yeah.
That means you got to work with these folks, and you got to do some horse trading. They got to tell you what they're passionate about. You got to tell them, I don't know anything about that. Go teach me about it. You have to govern. And there's tools available to you, and that's where I think the Association of California Cities, and why I'm so proud to be a part of them, is invaluable for newly electeds.
So what do you do for them?
They truly are the hub of public policy. We have so many programs for them. Let me give you some examples.
So I just got elected first-time city council in XYZ City. What do I do?
Well, on December 11th, you've got an opportunity because we're going to have a new policymakers briefing with some people who have been around for quite some time. Mayor Kurt Pringle of Anaheim, who was once Speaker of the Assembly, Senator Lou Correa, Mal Richardson, who's an attorney at Best Best and Krieger, a brilliant city attorney.
Don't they focus on, don't they handle a lot of cities, Best Best
they
and
do,
Krieger?
Yeah, they do a ton of cities. Mayor Peter Bufa, former mayor of Costa Mesa and now at Barclays Bank, an expert on municipal finance. Lacey Kelly herself from the ACCOC to talk about how we do public policy. I'll be sitting on that panel talking about governance.
That's worth coming right there.
Yeah, that's worth the price of admission. So you come on December 11th, you sit and you sup at that table with us. It's a round table. It's not talking heads. And you begin to have conversations about how do I lead? How do I govern? What do I need to know about budgets? What do I need to know about finance?
You drink from the font of knowledge.
There's Cal. He's at the fountain in the center of the square. He comes out and drinks from the fountain of knowledge. So there is an example, December 11th, with this new public policymakers briefing that's available. And you can find all this information, by the way, on the website at ACC.
And how long does this go on? All day? Hour?
No, it goes on hours. It's like a half-day thing, right?
Yeah.
Then you can sign up for the Public Policymakers Academy that we do in concert with the University of California, Irvine at UCI a couple times a year. We have a Public Policymakers Academy. It goes on for five consecutive Fridays all day.
Oh, wow.
It's a in-depth seminar. We bring in everyone who moves and shakes in public policy, and you learn your craft, right? And in the process of that learning, Paul, in interacting with people who have been in office for a long time and have experience, people who are newly elected like you that are sitting around those tables,
yeah.
That's where you learn to A, build relationships, and B, govern with one another, and have a conversation and not a confrontation.
And there you go. And that's what this is all about. We created the station because we want to have streaming conversations, not screaming conversations.
That's exactly right. This morning coming in, of course, I'm listening to commercial radio, listening to KABC, and one of my pals was on the air talking about public policy. We'll have her in later. And she was just getting bombarded because it was about screaming radio.
Yeah.
Nothing was learned in that segment,
yeah.
And we don't do that. So you have those opportunities, right? The new orientations for public policymakers, the Public Policymakers Academy, where you really get in depth. But then every month, the ACCOC has a dinner meeting. We bring in great people. Last week, we had Dan Walkers down from Sacramento to talk about public policy on a statewide
He's
level.
He's a fascinating guy.
Fascinating.
Been around
about
forever
the
writing about politics here from the Sacramento. Was he right for the Sacramento?
Yeah, Sacramento Bee. And it's syndicated in all kinds of places. So the bottom line is, look, this org is about helping you, the public servant, be a servant leader. And the new and not so newly elected all share one thing in common, and that's they have the burden and, I believe, the privilege of governing their cities and leading and looking out across the decades and making public policy. And you want to learn how to do that, how to be a policymaker and not a policy breaker and not somebody who just goes in to break things up and make noise and not lead.
And let me share with you, I'm sort of the voice of the everyman here. I'm not as knowledgeable or up on this stuff, but I have an interest in all this stuff, and so I try and pay attention to it. Like you, I did go to law school, but I only lasted a year and found myself working in the radio stations more than I was in the classroom.
Yeah, and all things come around, right?
All things come around. But what amazed me, the one member takeaway I took as we went to constitutional law in that first year, is that I guess I didn't realize the founders consciously broke the power up and forced us, whether we wanted to or not, to compromise. Now, I know compromise is the dirtiest of words right now on both the left and right, but that was what they put into it, isn't it?
That's right. That's right. And they did it for a good reason, right? The idea is that they were concerned, obviously, because they'd lived through it, the concentration of power.
Yeah.
They didn't want a king, and they didn't want just one branch of government to rule with fiat. And, you know, today you hear a lot of people rumbling about they're worried about what we've done to our institutions. Look, it's important, I think, to govern with your colleagues. And so you have the opportunity, if you're newly elected, and if you're a resident of a city that knows the newly elected, you supported them, you put their sign on your lawn, and you're going to see them at the Vons this afternoon, you tell them, hey, I was listening to OC Talk Radio to a stimulating conversation, and they told me there's an organization that'll teach you how to be a better. I hope you're going to sign up for that because that's why I supported you. And you get them in there, and we'll help them become a servant leader.
Can I ask one other thing here? This is just something they talk a lot about in the media. That it used to be when newly elected officials came in, they kind of kept low for the first year or two. They didn't immediately take the charge and everything because they didn't know really how the whole system worked. Maybe they came in because they were passionate to do something, and all of a sudden there's 20 other issues that maybe they didn't know something about. That seems to have changed. We seem to have bomb throwers that come in from day one and immediately want to start throwing their weight around and speaking up on things that maybe they don't know the full range of issues at that point. Is that just my opinion, or is that...
No, sadly true. I mean, I think they believe the campaign goes on forever. And I always use the three L's. This is what I said to that young woman I met with her list of 38. I said, you know, really what you need to do is you need to think about doing the three L's. You listen, you learn, and then you lead. You're trying to lead before you've listened and learned. I would do them in reverse.
See,
I don't know whether she took it as good advice.
Someone was sneezing in the back. They're allergic to that advice.
I don't know. I don't know, Roberts, if you're having the situation I'm having, but, you know, the Santa Anas have been up the last couple of days here in Southern California. My allergies are kicking my behind.
Me too.
I think they're a Trojan plot. I think they're trying to keep me from cheering Saturday. So they're taking away my breath, and, you know, our guests are sneezing. It's in the air. That's all it is.
I thought maybe they were allergic to this.
It's in the air all over the square. All right. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to do one of our favorite parts of the show, Gaffes and Gadflies. We had a gadfly last time.
Yes.
This time, oh, man, did our producer, Steve, find a phenomenal gaffe. And we're going to come back with it.
Nuts.
This guy is interesting and entertaining, and we'll be right back. All right. So here we are, Gaffes and Gadflies. All right. This segment needs a little explanation, 3 shows in. No matter where you are in government, no matter what level you're at, there's going to be days when you get on the microphone, you have a gavel in your hand, or you're leading a meeting, and you're going to do something incredibly dumb. That is a gaffe, right? I mean, you don't mean it, and you really want to walk it back, and you have to learn how to deal with it in public life, because we put our pants on one leg at a time. We're all human beings. We all make mistakes, tons of them. I do one at least every show just to keep Paul Roberts honest.
we have a list of them now.
We do. But that's going to happen to you. And then you're going to have to encounter gadflies, people who are community members. And God love them, for whatever reason, they become overly hyped or passionate about something, and they come in, and sometimes they're an irritant and a nuisance to you because you really have important work to do, and now you've gotten deep, right? You're beyond linoleum.
Yeah.
You have something important on the agenda, and they want to take time talking to you. And so we want to talk a little bit about the advice that we would give people when dealing with either their own gaffes or their local.
Because you made a point that as crazy as some of these people may be, God love them, at least they came out. When 99% of the people didn't come out.
Right.
And you don't want to discourage that, but at the same time, you don't want to encourage craziness here. So.
No, and listen, this is their moment to petition their government. It's in the Constitution. God love them. They're engaged, and I love that. So last week, we had a little Looney Tune from Santa Cruz who came out to talk. She was our gadfly. But today, this is one for the ages. This poor bloke is running for county treasurer in the Midwest in your neighborhood, Mr. Michigander.
Oh, we had lots of them
He's in Ohio, and just so I can, you know, make disclaimers.
Stark County, Ohio.
He's an intense and passionate guy, but he's also pretty darn scary. So let's cue him up. His name is Paul Davison, and so one Paul will cue another, and let's listen.
Ladies and gentlemen of the Stark County Republican Party Executive Committee, good evening. And thank you not only for your attendance, but for allowing me the opportunity to speak. My name is Phil Davison, and I am seeking our party's nomination for the position of Stark County Treasurer on November of 2010. In terms of my background, I am from the village of Minerva, where I am serving my 13th year of elected service as a Minerva Council member.
I turned you down because I thought you were going to get too crazy.
Let's just stop there a second. Did this guy say he's been elected several times and he's a 13-year council member?
Yeah.
And he's doing this?
And he's crying.
He should know
he's
better.
So
than I mean, I know he's passionate. I like that. All right, let's see where he goes. Go ahead, Phil Davison. Keep going.
In terms of education, I have a bachelor's degree in sociology, a bachelor's degree in history, a master's degree in public administration, and a master's degree in communication.
He failed that class.
In terms of elections across Stark County, I have represented our party twice on the county ballot in both the primary and the general elections. When I ran for Stark County Clerk of Courts in 1996 and Stark County Commissioner in 2000, and I will not apologize for my tone tonight. I have been a Republican in times good, and I have been a Republican in times bad.
I think this is one of the bad times.
I guess this is one of the bad ones.
All right, I'm going to stop.
Yeah, you know, listen, little word of advice to those of you who are speaking. It's all right to be passionate, but once you start screaming like that, right? I mean, people start backing up toward the exit.
Didn't anybody ever watch the Governor Dean video where this campaign blew up with one of these?
This guy is a Republican version of Dean. All right, let's play just a little bit more of him and see if Phil can pull it together. Come on, Mr. Davison.
Come on.
We're rooting for you.
Albert Einstein issued one of my most favorite quotes in the history of the spoken word, and it is as follows.
Don't speak if you don't know what you're saying. What was it?
excuse me, in the middle of difficulty lies opportunity. I'm going to repeat that so
please.
I have clarity tonight. In the middle of difficulty lies opportunity. This is the opportunity we've been waiting for.
Okay. I've got to stop him there. We've got to talk a little bit about what we've learned here.
Now, I got to point out something. We've played two of these two weeks in a row.
Yeah.
They're both from your side of the aisle here.
Yeah, I know you. My friend from the Democratic side of the aisle pointing out that we have crazies.
Point that out.
I mean, you can do it. Don't misquote Albert Einstein. You can do a lot of things, but don't do that. You know, be proud. Phil Davidson, wherever you are back there in Ohio, you are now a legend on Gaffney.
A legend in your own mind.
All right.
What makes him – he's obviously overhyped. He's rehearsed this way too many times, too many cups of coffee, and somehow he thought that screaming substitutes for reality.
Yeah, we need to keep Phil away from the Starbucks. That's what it is. Before you come to the county meeting, Phil, no Starbucks. Now, I don't think it's that he's so over-caffeinated. He's really excited. He's going for his county's nomination, and he thinks it's an important moment, and he got himself so hyped that he lost it. So if you're running for public office, folks, look, there's plenty of stuff for people to make fun of. Don't give them any more by letting your emotions get the best of you. As a politician, you need to emulate the swimming duck. Okay, picture a duck swimming in a pond.
Swimming duck. Okay.
The swimming duck. The legs under the waterline are just going fast and furious. They are just paddling like crazy. But the duck above the surface is smooth and just gliding along. You can have all the frenzied activity in your brain you want because you're excited about your public policy. But when you're talking to your public and you're trying to inspire them to follow you and you're trying to do something of value, screaming at them and losing control is just not a good way. That made a gaffe. That was a clear mistake. And Phil Davidson, who's been in office for 13 years, ought to know better. So,
well, and you go to YouTube where we pulled this from, and we won't even repeat the language, but they basically say bat crazy.
Yeah. He appears to be someone who has absolutely lost control of himself. And I don't think that's necessarily that's who he is. And on that given evening, he just lost it, and that was his gap.
Let me throw you one other thing here. I've learned in 20 years of doing radio, traditional radio, and then the last few years of doing this internet radio, which is sort of more like a social medium. It's more sort of like Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn. Here's the message that I hear over and over and over again, or the lesson I've seen over and over again, which is be real. If you try and be too forced, too fake, too amped up, people will see through it. And in the age of video and stuff like this, like Governor Dean learned, much to his dismay, when he tried to hype himself up and his whole campaign went viral and blew up over it, don't be fake, don't be phony, don't be forced. Be real.
Yeah, and it's frightening to think maybe that was Phil being real.
Well,
But it would not serve him well. So those of you who are going to be in public life, don't be a Phil. And make sure you sort of settle down.
Don't be a fake. Be real.
Don't be a fake. Be real. All right. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about something that's very real. The trees in your community, your urban forest, why it matters to you as a city. We've got some experts in the studio to talk to us about that. And we will do that right after this. And we're back. So who do we have here today?
I thought you were going to read a commercial there.
No, you weren't
going to read a commercial? Okay.
No. You thought I was.
I thought that's why we took a little break, and you were going to read a commercial for these guys or one of the other people.
Just taking a break for transition. We're going to do that one later in the show.
I want to know why they're all dressed as trees today here.
They're dressed up as trees. They're not. We have several people here from West Coast Arborist, but on air we're going to have Andy Trotter, who's Vice President of Field Operations. He is in charge of overseeing tree pruning, removal, and planting crews, as well as recycling and training programs for the company, active in the tree care industry for many, many years. He is an arborist and a utility specialist at the California Urban Forest Council, and as an urban forester, and we'll ask him about that. Andy enjoys, among other things, camping when he has a chance with his family and friends, and he's co-chair of Conservation and Fire Safety at a 1,400-acre youth camp in Southern California. Andy, welcome to the City Square.
Well, thank you, Jerry, and appreciate the opportunity presented by the Association of California Cities to come here to City Square and talk to you about urban forests.
And before we do that, let me just thank you on behalf of the Association of California Cities. Thank you, Pat, everyone over at West Coast Arborist for being sponsors and helping get us on the air and allowing us the opportunity to do good public policy in the square. It's a great opportunity for us, and we thank you for reaching deep in your pockets and helping us make it happen.
So let's talk trees.
This is really a fascinating company. They're responsible for nurturing millions and millions of trees in Orange County on behalf of local governments. And, you know, I want you to know before we get too far into this that Cal really likes trees. It reminds him of his, you know, youth and when he was a child in the forest.
So that's his happy noise,
he's
too.
He's very comfortable among the trees. So, Andy, let's start simply at the very top. What is West Coast Arborists, or WCA, and what do you do?
West Coast Arborists is a business that grew up locally, actually right here in Orange County. But we now serve over 200 cities throughout California, helping them take care of their public trees.
Wow,
trees that are managed in public spaces.
200 cities. Now, just for perspective, I think there are something like 480 cities in the entire state, right?
Correct.
So that's half the state.
Correct. So,
wow.
Yes.
Wow.
And we also do a few cities in Arizona and Nevada as well.
So you're throughout California and in the West. And tell our listeners what the concept of an urban forest is. We've been talking about that when we've been doing your commercials over the last couple of shows, and it's fascinated Roberts over there.
You got me. It's a term of art I guess I never heard before and wouldn't have associated with dry, drought, deserty Southern California.
It's true. You know, definitely we're in a dry climate here. But it's interesting. You know, people, when they come to move and live to a new place, they often plant trees. And I think it's for a simple reason. It's to make that place a better place where they live. And when many people start coming together and adding on more trees and more trees, pretty soon we've got a forest of trees, and that's certainly what we're surrounded by here in Southern California, with many, you know, awesome values that those trees provide to us.
That's true, and they provide a history for your city. I always talk about the fact that the city of Tustin, where I served as mayor, as you know, is known as the city of trees. That's our motto, and we have more trees per capita than any other city in Orange County. At least that's our claim to fame. But we have trees in our town, in Old Town, as you know, sycamores that go back hundreds of years. I mean, they go back to pre-existing the city's incorporation by a long shot.
And certainly the permanence of trees is one of those values we enjoy, along with a lot of the environmental values and such that people associate with trees today.
So how many trees do we have just in our county? Do you have an estimate of how many trees are here?
That would be pulling a number out of somewhere.
Yeah.
But I know our company altogether takes care of about 8 million trees throughout California.
8 million trees.
We have GPS inventory of 8 million trees.
I told somebody that you guys were coming, a neighbor of mine, and he said, I said, what is it about trees that, you know, why do we come from Michigan, we plant trees, and we plant a variety of trees. And he said, just what you guys are intimating, it's the history of it. He said, look at the tree in my backyard. I planted that when my little girl was born. Now look how tall it is. And he measures the course of his life with the growth of that tree. I thought, wow, I never thought of that, but it is. It's something about it.
And harken back to when you're a kid, right? What's one of the first things you do with a friend?
Oh, yeah.
You climb a tree.
Yeah.
You find a tree in the neighborhood that's got branches big enough for you to get up high, and you climb up there because it gives you a chance to, A, you know, get into the canopy of the leaves and hide from the adults, and B, get a different perspective. You're tall, you're
playing
big.
In the trees.
Well, certainly in a desert, you know, shade is a big deal to us.
That's
right?
True, too.
And if you go out on a city street today where there is no trees, you might find the temperature 10 to 15, 20 degrees higher than if you go on a street that is nicely shaded in trees.
That's why I planted some next to my house, because they do shade the house and keep it cooler.
And that can lower your energy bills.
And that's one example of a benefit. But let's talk about some others, Andy, because you're an urban forester, right?
Right.
So tell me what it is about an urban forest, what it is about the tree stock in our towns that helps the community, that makes it a better community. What kinds of things does it provide for the community as an asset?
Well, I mean, certainly the intrinsic values that people enjoy trees is one of them. Today, the environmental values are becoming more and more, you know, of a concern to everybody. And
right. The
fact that trees do shade our homes and lower our temperatures.
And save us energy.
They save us energy. They're actually part of our water system. In a watershed management perspective, trees help water percolate into the ground.
And don't they, obviously, they suck a lot of pollutants and carbon dioxide out of the air. We live in a car-based society. Here we're pumping tons of this stuff in, and the trees help absorb
correct
that.
These days trees are being recognized for certainly sequestering carbon, but also filtering volatile organic compounds out of the air. Our local air quality management district and several other districts throughout the state are now embracing trees as a method to help clean the air.
And they add to the beauty of the community. I can tell you that people become very attached to their trees, yes. and the particular trees on their block. They like it if they have, you know, flowering lilacs or whether they have magnolia trees. I mean, I made a big deal when we moved in our home of wanting a magnolia tree over in the corner of our yard. So I know they become attached to them, and I think it does make a difference in the quality of life as well, does it not?
Yes, it does. It certainly does.
Now, can I ask one negative thing here, though?
Sure. You want to be negative about a tree? Go ahead.
I want to be negative about a tree. The one thing I've noticed, the little bit I've read about trees in the county here, we've got a hodgepodge of trees. And some of these trees should not have necessarily been planted here. Don't they say that about the eucalyptus trees and stuff, the rows of them that were planted for windbreaks, and now they're a problem?
You know, in our industry, we look at the right tree in the right place. And certainly there's literally thousands of varieties of trees that are in Southern California, and it's because of our wonderful climate. The trees that are going to do best are trees that come from other parts of the world that have a similar climate to us.
Got it.
So if we plant trees that use a lot of water and we're in a water, you know, concern right now, we want to think of other species that don't use so much water.
So talk about eucalyptus. Is that because I see them everywhere and I thought they're so beautiful, but I know they're a mess. But are they good trees or bad trees? And aren't they cutting a bunch of them down and replacing them?
The answer is both. They're a great tree in the right place, and they certainly can, you know, give us a lot of advantage. But if they're right along the street and they're shedding branches and there's safety concerns, then they have to be managed to you know, remove those safety concerns.
Andy is a natural politician. The answer is both, and he makes sure that both sides of the
So we're not going to offend all the tree huggers and the tree lovers. I love the trees, but I've read that that they are trying to be more thoughtful in when they plant trees rather than just sort of random or decorative.
Well, and things change, right? I mean, when we had the eucalyptus as windrows, we were agrarian and we were growing crops, and they were very important to maintaining those crop trees and keeping them safe from the Santa Anas and like. But now you build a bunch of infrastructure. You bring in homes. You put in sidewalks and water systems and power systems, and you put things underground like fiber optics, and those roots can become a problem with some species, can they not?
Well, certainly, and you know, what you really lead to is what is the job of an urban forester.
Yes, right.
And that's to look at the goals of having trees in a given location in a community, look at those potential values, look at what the stakeholders are trying to achieve there, and match it with species that are going to have the longest successful life there so that they don't have conflict just after a few years and community debate over whether or not their roots are a problem and things like that.
Well, and clearly West Coast arborists have become pros at this. You wouldn't have half the cities of California as clients if you weren't experts at this. So let's talk a little bit about the day for an urban forester, right? I can tell you what my day is like, and I don't want to tell you what Paul's days are like, but I wonder what yours is like. So what does an urban forester do? What is his day like? Can you take me sun up to sundown on a typical day for you?
My morning today started answering a email from a concerned resident about bluebird nesting.
I didn't know we had bluebirds in Orange County.
Trees and wildlife habitat's a huge opportunity, and absolutely the urban forest brings in lots of neat birds. So, yes, we answer those kind of questions to people, and we try to do the right thing out on the job. But we're also managing our crews. We're working with the cities trying to make sure they produce the lists of work to be done, help them prioritize that work, and help them accomplish their goals.
And what is the goal? What is it, Jerry? What does the City of Trees do to take? I mean, are you just there to trim them? Are you there to feed them or nurture them back to health or just chop them down? What's the role of the city in keeping this forest alive?
No, look, I mean, these are a public asset. As someone who was in charge of governance, as a mayor, and proud of the fact that we had so many trees in Tustin, that's a city asset. It belongs to the taxpayer. It's a huge part of the texture of your community.
Why people move there.
And some people come just because of what your city looks like, and the trees are a huge part of it. Take, for instance, in Old Town Tustin, my hometown, and I'll be parochial for a moment.
Okay.
We have these wonderful trees that line El Camino and Main Street that are shaped and governed. These ficus are just beautiful. And every year we have the world's largest chili cook-off in Old Town. And in the weeks preceding that, West Coast Arborist comes out and they trim those things to a precise, you know, honed look. And it presents the best face of the city. So we're trying to take care of them. We're trying to nurture them. We're trying to maintain a public asset. We're also trying to be intelligent about where we put them so we don't have problems with our water systems and our utilities. And we're trying to allow our kids to have the same experiences that we grew up with, right? A neighborhood with lots of shade and lots of grass and a place to play and a tree to enjoy, because it's part of being a human being.
Now, let me give you another example. Okay, I live in Las Flores, which is an unincorporated area next to Ladera between Ranchos Santa Margarita there. And part of the appeal of the community when the developers built it was this public park where they went and put, is it Live Oaks? Is that California Oaks?
Quite a few, yes.
They put a bunch of them there, and it was beautiful. And it did attract us, and people loved to go to this little park and do it. But the problem is they planted grass all around it so we could all play on it. And in watering the grass, they overwatered, and the trees started falling over.
Yeah, and that's what urban foresters pay attention to, right? Those kinds of issues.
Try and make sure we have a balance in the location where we plant a tree, try and keep the tree safe while we maximize the values of the tree.
So it seems like the developer didn't think that through. He threw it up because he knew people would be attracted to it, and then he left, and now all of a sudden it didn't work.
If I had a bandwagon I could get on, I would encourage every city to have an arborist associated with their planning departments.
Right.
Because so often we see these type of instant gratification plans that do look pretty
right.
and attract people, but 5, 10, 15 years down the road, now we have community conflict.
That's what I was trying to get at. Yeah.
Just as you would plan for how you're going to build a stock of housing or where you're going to put your shopping centers, you have to plan about what trees and where you plant them.
And you have to understand the attributes of those species, how big they're going to grow, do they have surface roots, do they have deep roots, how much water do they need. It is fairly complicated.
So listeners, servant leaders out there, if you're elected, members of the public, if you talk to them when you see them at Save On later this afternoon, make sure that you're asking them, do we have an arborist on staff?
Yeah.
Do we have someone talking to people like West Coast Arborists about our tree stock?
Because it isn't just the damage they'll do when the roots grow too big. It's the fact that you're going to lose this asset that you get. It was instant gratification. I love the way you put it. All right, let me give you another hot one here. Crepe myrtles. I love the look of crepe myrtles, but they're not really a tree, are they? Aren't they a giant bush?
You know, it's a debatable subject. It's funny.
Yeah, I know my trees, Jerry.
You know, I'm astonished. No wonder he wanted to talk about
I've
urban
heard
forests.
Crepe myrtles called crap myrtles by foresters. However, you know, they're also an enduring tree that can grow up to 40 feet tall. And a lot of times we end up planting trees that grow too big for the space where we want them, and then after a few years we have to cut them down. So it's really it's a choice. It is an ornamental tree. It's not a shade type tree.
I'm going to take 2 seconds. You're going to help me in my house here. I planted some ficus because they're beautiful.
Ouch.
They grew like weeds, and all of a sudden they're in the back of my neighbors going, these are going to ruin all of our cement hardscape. You got to cut that thing down. And I'm like, really? Do I?
Well, the ficus trees come from tropical environment, okay, real wet, and the roots grow on the surface. Okay, so yes, Disney brought them to us back in the 50s and 60s, and all the cities around California loved them, especially Southern California.
Yeah. Right.
And, 30, 40 years later, a lot of community debates. Should we preserve them at the high cost of, but if we cut the roots all the time, is the tree safe anymore?
So let me go there. I don't mean to divert from your problem, Paul. And
no, but I
know you've been waiting for weeks to ask
this.
Andy, what do I do with this ficus? And I will get him to give you that answer. But let me stop and take a turn for a moment, because you talk about the fact that sometimes we have to remove them, Andy, right? We have to change the trees up because they've grown too large for the space in which we first put them. But then that brings into the question what you do with all this. You guys have a huge recycling program, do you not?
Yes. And
tell us about that.
Well, I mean, it all has to go somewhere. And there was a time where we end up paying a lot of money in tipping fees, going to people and saying, how much will you charge me to take my trash? But we have a full-time recycling coordinator at West Coast Arborist, and he works with all the different recycling venues to try and maximize the use of the byproduct. But specifically,
and what happens to it? What do they do?
Well, I mean, it goes into alternative daily cover at the dump. It goes into compost. These days, there are people making energy out of wood chip. One of the really neat things that we're doing as an educational program at West Coast Arborist is milling urban trees into lumber. And so we've actually found
cool
that all
that?
Of these
we're milling lumber again here, like the old days.
Tropical trees, and they're hardwoods, and so a lot of them have really neat, unique grains, and turn into beautiful, tables.
And what do you do with the wood?
We sell it as slabs of wood, or we make products. Sometimes we make things that we can get back into our cities for benches
so
and things like that.
Can cities do that? Is that a source of profit for them if they want to cut down their trees and turn them into lumber?
It's a tough one to make a profit on. It's more of an educational thing for us, and I think it's helped us see the fact that we need to recycle everything, so it's maybe lowered some of our costs, but it certainly hasn't turned into a profit center for our company.
Right, anyway. And cities wouldn't naturally do that. But if you have to remove a tree and you can get it recycled and have it used again, I think it's a responsible stewardship of the
rather than throw it into the dump or try and burn it. Neither one of which sounds like a good idea.
Right, exactly. No, that's fascinating. So who are the guys on your crews? Who becomes a forester in the city? Where do you find these talented people who take care of this stuff?
From all directions and backgrounds, people that simply want labor jobs but then are interested in what they're doing, and they grow up and they learn more, and we help them with education to become certified as tree workers and arborists by the International Society of Arboriculture, and they can continue that type of career path. Sometimes they come to us with college educations and backgrounds, and maybe they're looking to do more supervisory type of jobs, so we work with them on what they need to understand for the field parts.
Can I ask, how many people do you have on staff to take care of 8 million trees?
A little over 750 right now.
Wow.
All right, I got to ask, because there's only a couple minutes left before we do our wrap-up here. Give me the hot trees. They must have changed through. What's the tree of the day here that everybody, that you're suggesting cities plant or people plant, as opposed to just randomly go pick the ficus because it was pretty and then turn to
I'm not a big fan of a tree of the day. I would encourage any community to have 40 to 80 or even more species that they choose from. Some small ones, some large ones, some medium-sized ones, some that are tall and upright, some that have color, so that you can go look at your individual planting spaces and match up the right tree with the right place.
And you know what I wish I had when I bought my house? We bought it basically new from the developer. Two things I've learned, and I learned this from the Santa Margarita Water District, had an open house where you could go and learn about this kind of stuff and planting stuff. One, I didn't realize that most of the developers, when they build these things, raise the ground. They literally scrape off all the topsoil so they can get it flat. And so I was trying to plant things that would never grow because there was no soil
left.
Poor soil. Right. And the second thing is, I wish somebody had a list, the city. Well, there is no city where I am. But I wish somebody had a list and said, here are the trees that grow best, and here are some other trees that will grow, but you should pay attention to that ficus because here's what's going to happen. I never knew what was going to happen.
Yeah, good point. No, I mean, I think that's true. That we don't know when we move into our homes what's really on the ground below us. But as a mayor who cares about sales tax in his city and who has big box stores like Home Depot, I want you to go buy soil amendments and amend your
soil. That's true.
And before you go buy my trees.
But I wish the city, I don't know if anybody's done this, here's my every man's suggestion. Come up with a list of trees and that the public can access. It says, okay, here's 10 trees you may want to look
at. Many cities actually have exactly that, normally focused towards planting in the city parkways and parks. So that's exactly something we do.
Well, I as a citizen would love it if my local government would tell me about trees that work well here and don't work well here, so I don't plant a ficus and then have to cut it down.
If you're someone very close to Roberts out there in Ladera, send him an email with a list of trees.
There is a website called Select Tree. It's hosted by Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. You can just Google Select Tree, all one word. It'll populate, and it has about 4,000 species of trees that grow in California that you can filter by attribute. How tall
That's
are
what
they?
I'm
what color
for.
Flower? Those
because there are things like the I forget what it's called, the Western something. There's a guide to growing plants, and you can sort of see what grows in your climate and what doesn't grow, so you don't try and grow something that'll fail.
Yeah.
And you don't end up with something that's a problem.
Yeah, the Western Sunset Garden.
That's
book.
It, right.
Yeah.
All right, last question, Andy, and then we're going to run out to a commercial and come back and wrap the third show of the City Square.
Wow.
But unbelievable.
That went way too
fast. Went way too fast. We're having too much fun. If you had to leave our listeners with one thing, one important message that you want them to know about their urban forests, because we all have them, what is it? I mean, what do you really want the listener to understand today?
Well, I certainly want people to hire people who have the credentials and the licensing to do the job. That's certainly something our city looks to do. And I would really encourage cities to consider arborists in their planning departments.
Well, you've heard it from the expert.
No. And would you just have him, he'd just be like a consultant, and he would go around and look at the stock of trees and keep track
of it? It would depend on your demand, but, plan review, not just a tree that'll fit when it's planted in a 3-foot-wide planter, but something that'll be able to live there 40 years later.
The right tree in that spot. That's exactly right. Thank you, Andy. I really appreciate it. Our guest has been Andy Trotter, an urban forester with West Coast Arborist. Thank you again to everybody at West Coast for the sponsorship of this show.
When is Arbor Day or something?
Arbor Day is really the springtime, and communities can vary a little bit, but for us, it's in April and March.
So would you come back?
Well, I know you're busy then, but we're going to bring you back on Arbor Day.
Love to.
And we're going to talk more about trees. All right, and when we come back, we'll do a wrap in this Rivalry Week. We're in the trees with Cal the Bear here in the city square.
Okay.
All right, I have a quick message that I want to give you from one of our great sponsors. They were here last week in studio talking to us, and we're so delighted to have them. The Hero Program is a sponsor of the City Square. You now have learned, if you listened to the last show, and if you haven't, shame on you, you can find it here at octalkradio.net.
And another fascinating program I never knew existed.
Yep, the Hero Program. It makes energy-efficient and water conservation upgrades affordable for you homeowners, so you can get things like solar and heating improvements, cooling systems, windows, roof, water conservation systems, all of that to lower your utility bills with no upfront cost to you. They have a way in which you can finance it and put it on your property tax bill and cover it over a long period of time. You amortize it like your mortgage. It's currently available in over 21 Orange County jurisdictions. You can check availability in your area, and you can see if you qualify by visiting Hero Program, HEROProgram.com.
And Phil Dawson wanted to add a few more words.
Phil Davidson is back. He has no lack of energy and didn't need a program to finance
That's
it.
Right.
So please do a check into Hero Program. Look and see if your city is one. If not, ask your servant leader whether or not they're thinking about that program. You can get more information about that from Hero Program and also from our website at accoc.org. And now, back to the show.
Okay.
So the third one is in the books. Mr. Roberts.
What's your takeaway?
I do think that we have sort of laid the groundwork for where we're going, and I hope the listener has found that they're learning a little bit about public policy and public policy making and how we transition from politics to policy when we are elected. I hope they've also learned, we had some interesting guests, a little bit about the association itself when we had Lacey in here. We had a mayor in here to talk about his city and about what's going on politically there, a pollster to talk about sort of the landscape of time. And then people who are talking about energy efficiency or about their urban forests and the stock and the assets that the cities hold. We want you to know more about what your city government is doing. We want you, if you're a public servant, to know more about how to govern. And we want you to have fun along the way with some gaffes and gadflies
yes.
so you can learn while enjoying it at the
learn
same time.
Learn about something. I'm going to drop one on you here. Every week I'm going to just try and find something, if I can, that I've never known before. And then maybe this is a teaser for future ideas here. But
okay.
I looked at a new magazine that I subscribe to about the water industry, actually. Don't ask me why. And it says, California legislature approved $7.5 billion water bond to provide drinking water for disadvantaged communities. I never knew that, as well as water and recycling. You know anything about that?
And we do, and there's a big bond that was approved that has impact on Southern California, which is arid, and the governor has plans for more water transmission, and we will do a show on that.
All right, good.
Because we have many water agencies who are constituent members and sponsors and helpful to the Association of California Cities. So, here we are in Rivalry Week. You've been with us, Cal the Bear, and his cousin Joe Bruin. Cal and Joe, where are you guys? They're somewhere around
One of them
square.
Came in here. One of them was wandering around here. I don't know if he's still in the studio, but you had one of the little bears walking around here.
We did, yeah. He's here. He actually is here, to cheer.
Can he say something?
Yeah. For us? All right, Joe, we want you to say something on the air. Let's give him a moment here to say something.
God, that sounded scary.
Okay, little eight clap from Joe Bruin just to get Rivalry going. I know all my Trojan friends are just enjoying the heck out of this. So we are now at the wrap. We're about to leave, but we want to tell you, as we always do, sort of what our mission is about, what the show is about, and what we hope you're learning.
And this I was going to hope that you tease us with a couple of upcoming guests that might be coming.
I will, as the music comes up, I will talk a little bit about the future, but we want you to remember that our mission is to teach you about the craft of making public policy, to bring you, the public, into the public policy-making arena, and to improve our communities by teaching our leaders how to be good good servant leaders. So that's what we're about here. You've been in the city square with the bear. You have certainly learned a great deal, I hope, over the last 3 weeks. We hope you're enjoying the show. Please let us know what you want to hear and what changes you want. And we'll see you next week. We're here every Wednesday morning. Next week, we're bringing in the Chief Executive Officer of the Orange County Transportation Authority, Daryl Johnson.
Wow, there's another whole big topic.
A whole big topic about how we move around this county through our urban forests. So we hope you have a wonderful week. Go Bruins, and we'll see you next Wednesday right here in the City Square.
You found it. Orange County has a new City Square, the only place where people can gather to learn from each other, share ideas, share concerns, and talk with the policymakers involved in tackling these tough issues that face us all. Brought to you by the Association of California Cities, OC, Waste Management. Is it Western Arborist? Did I get the name right here?
Coast Arborist. West. What? Have you got me off?
I just blew the name of the sponsor.
It's West Coast Arborist.
West Coast
been our
Arborist.
Guest.
There we go. And many others. Thanks for listening. Brought to you by Orange County's only community radio station, OCTalkRadio.net.